children and inter-family conflicts, children, parent-child conflicts into your course, how you approach it.
Go ahead.
We're so polite today. It's just basically, at least from my interpretation of it, and having a couple of children that are of communicating age, which Marcia doesn't yet. She has a brand new little baby. It boils down to accepting the child just as he is, which is not just always as easy as it may sound. We have a delightful little girl who's 8 years old. She's smart and she's fun to be with and fun to talk to. And then we have Becky, and she's 5, and she borders on hyperkinesis, and she's not nearly as smart, and she's got sort of a belligerent attitude towards life in general. And just speaking from personal experience, I find it much more difficult to accept her and to relate to her as than I do my other child, which ends up sometimes in favoritism and which we try very hard to control that. I guess I would have to say it really isn't like that too often, but I think that's just one of the very basic principle in relating to your children as parents is accepting them as people, you know, and not just, oh, they're too little, they don't understand, you know.
And another thing with the idea of marriage enrichment. And one of the old adages that strikes me is that, you know, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. And I'm wondering if the people who attend your classes are come from homes and families where there's a lot of trouble, or do you have a balance between those who just want to get more out of life? And I think there's more to life than just, you know, 9 to 5 and a weekend.
I think there is probably a balance. I have had girls in my classes whose marriages have literally been on the rocks. They're going to marriage counselors, and they're really in a last-ditch effort to save the marriage. I've also had girls that have had very good marriages. In fact, I had one gal in my last class tell me, "Do you know I'm married to the total man?" And I said, "That's great. That's super." She says, "As a matter of fact, he has been so great in our marriage that now I feel I'm not upholding my end, and I'm here to try to do something about it." So really there is a balance.
I don't know if Greg had this in mind, but I think Maribel is rather careful about her avoidance of the cure-all for all kinds of psychopathology. You might find yourself in a situation where there really is no way that you're going to resolve this in a short, and I mean 4 weeks, or I guess it's subsequent weeks,
yes.
Successive weeks,
four weeks.
Uh-huh. That's really short-term counseling. If you could save a $3,500 psychiatrist bill for $15, it's the bargain of a lifetime. I know that the Lord can do it in some respects and in all respects, but sometimes the deficit of terrible childhood experiences and all the rest that Maribel does refer to, just too much to overcome. And I'm sure you don't have those expectations. It would be kind of a terrible situation if you did. Did you want to comment, Mary?
Marcia and I both have psychologists that we recommend.
Uh-huh.
I recommend my husband because he works with a counseling psychologist here in the area, and they have offices at Northwest. And Marcia has another young man that she recommends, both Christians, that we recommend to our women. And this hasn't happened just an awful lot to me anyway, where I've had to recommend a psychologist, but it does happen occasionally. And I had one lady in my last class that she came to the first 2 weeks, she paid her money and everything, and she never came back. And I asked the hostess of the class, who was a friend of hers, I asked her what happened. And she said that this woman, she was like in her middle 40s, and she said that the problems in her marriage were just too rooted too deeply for her to be able to apply any of this now. That at least what she had gotten out of it was that she realized that she and her husband really did need some deeper professional help that couldn't be gotten. And I don't guess either one of us are, you know, are convinced that we can save anybody's marriage, really. You know, that's...
I think Mary Lou's pointing out a very good point. If girls come to the course and realize that they need, or in talking with us, we realize they need something a lot more like marriage counseling, then we do refer them on. Because we're not... I have a master's in social work, and I have worked in marriage counseling, but I'm not in private practice. And I refer the girl on when she needs more.
It's much more the marriage enrichment than the ferreting out of very deep problems and
right.
resolving
mm-hmm.
them. Mm-hmm. Chuck.
I'd like to come back to a couple comments that were made in that first testimony, I believe George. And dear, first of all, I was really, I can see that something has happened just in the use of the words our and us. I really appreciated the fact that you were talking about the two of you as one. But you mentioned that Mary Lou had first gotten into this through like a woman's fellowship or a Bible study. The book had been passed around. My question, since most of us are headed toward the pastoral ministry, will be in churches as ministers or as assistants in some way. Do you think that this book can be used in a Bible study at a church in any way, whether it's a like a women's Bible study or a women's fellowship group or a mixed couples group? Anybody can answer this question. And if so, how? Or if you don't feel it can, how might it be incorporated into a marriage enrichment program that a church might have?
Go ahead.
What's everybody looking at me for?
I don't think that the book is should be recommended as a book that should be used as a Bible study guide or in a church as a couples kind of thing. First of all, for a couple of reasons. First of all, Maribel didn't write the book for Christians necessarily. And she specifically didn't want the book to be brought into churches to the extent to which it would be identified as something for Christian. It's an evangelistic tool for outreach. And so bringing it into a church, and churches are used a lot, the buildings are used, and some churches even sponsor it. But the attitude has always been, let's not identify this as a Christian, quote, kind of thing, so that non-Christians will be turned off by it. It's an evangelistic tool. In addition to that, bringing it in as a Bible study and a couples class, the book is really directed towards the woman. Although the principles are applicable to man and woman, I can see it being used like as a reference book with a lot of other books. And I think probably if you were going to have a marriage enrichment course, you would have to approach it similarly to the way Maribel approached her own marriage enrichment. That is, she involved herself in psychology books and in human behavior books and in the Word of God specifically, and brought a lot of these things together for a marriage enrichment book, which she has, which she calls The Total Woman. But I think if you're going to have this in a church-related ministry, it needs to be something that's brought together from a lot of different points, or use something which has been specifically designed
learning
for that.
To be a woman or learning to be a man.
Learning, for instance, there's a Bible study, Learning to Be a Woman, and there's another one called Learning to Be a Man that you could use in a Bible study-related kind of thing. Yeah.
Okay, then. For example, you mentioned that several churches have sponsored it. how might a church go about sponsoring this? In other words, how do you have experiences with churches that sponsor it? How have they seen it, and how have they implemented it? In other words, are they using it for community outreach? Are they using it as a service to the community rather than just as direct evangelism?
Well, our church, first of all, did it, the church we currently attend, and they used it as an opportunity for evangelistic outreach. There's another church in the area who's the pastor's a friend of ours, and they did it. They used it as an evangelistic outreach. Their major emphasis was trying to use their facilities as an opportunity to reach women in the community for Jesus Christ. And that's the way they essentially approached it. Now, not every church approaches it that way. What happens is one of two things, or maybe there are more than two things, but generally speaking, someone in the church, a woman, wants to have the course, and then she makes arrangements for the church facilities to be used, and then that becomes the base point from which the course is taught. There have been occasions when a minister feels that this would be good for the women in his congregation, and it comes down through the hierarchy of the church, and the church sponsors it itself. I think those are fewer cases, but it has been done.
In which case, he will appoint or ask a woman in the church if she will be the hostess, which involves getting publicity out and getting the announcements. And I guess maybe here we ought to say something about the other side of the coin. There are a lot of times when a woman will go to her minister and say, you know, can we use the church to have this course? And he'll say, what? That course? And there are many that are totally against it. I had an experience. We had it all set up in a church. It was, the advertising was out, and a girl called me and said that the minister said that his board would fire him if they went through with it. So we quickly moved it to her home. Do you have anything to add?
I wonder if you could comment on this possibility. If one of these gentlemen is the pastor of a congregation and he has a marriage counseling situation, do you see this as a possible vehicle for assist in that situation? Would you qualify that, or is it how would you see its use then in that type of a counseling situation? Yes, maybe you'd like to.
The reason I'd like to answer that is I do some counseling and some marriage counseling. If the minister, if he's in a counseling situation, feels that the woman is in the position that it could be helpful to her, then it could be as an assist.
Mm-hmm.
As long as he's aware, I think the reason it could be an assist is because in this kind of a class relationship, she's with other women, with a woman teacher who is talking about things that have worked for them. And that is positive reinforcement to change her attitude, which is what Marcia's been saying. It's a change of attitude. And sometimes women in a group talking about how this has happened is great deal more beneficial than mm-hmm. a male counselor
sure.
saying this is what you ought to be doing. You know,
right.
he's a male chauvinist
yeah.
pig,
right.
but
right.
the women might be more beneficial in that kind of thing. He has to be careful, as in any counseling situation, that some women in counseling would be totally turned off by this approach, and it would be worse for them to go than it would be for them not to go.
Mm-hmm.
It's a judgment factor.
Yes, right. Okay, Don and then Jim.
What I'm saying, marriage enrichment or marriage encounter, this other thing that's going on in society now, makes a very big emphasis that it's a marriage enrichment course, and it's limited to people who have good marriages, per se. If this is called marriage enrichment, I see women taking this, women, as you said, 50%, say they're women or their marriages are rotten. It only can help those women who are, and I hate to use this term, but basically at fault in their marriage. And the women who come there and see this as helpful might get more hurt taking this back to their home when the fault lies in the husband, in that sense. Why aren't there restrictions in this type of course if it's supposed to be marriage enrichment? And I think Marriage Encounter solved that problem by limiting it to people who have good marriages. You're not enriching a marriage then, in fact. You're counseling, and it's not marriage enrichment anymore. When you're trying to, if a family, if a husband and wife situation is breaking up, you're not enriching anymore, you're in a counseling situation. You're to that point. Enrichment means to build on something you have going already and to help move forward. If you don't, I don't know if you understand what I mean, but Marriage Encounter puts a limit to what they call marriage enrichment.
I think what you're saying is, are there any prerequisites for girls taking the course?
Right.
It? There aren't.
Is there safeguards in your system? I mean, well, is there prerequisites?
There aren't. A girl, for whatever reason, decides she wants to take the course can be in any kind of a marital strait. She can have a great marriage or she can have a marriage that's just been on the rocks. And many times I've had girls that have been taking the course coincidentally with marriage counseling. So we're, as you pointed out, we're not saying that this is a panacea for all marriages. And it's not an in-depth marriage counseling tool. It's trying to enrich marriages, or maybe even give a girl, if she came and had a very bad marriage, a start and a little encouragement and a little hope to go on and get something more in-depth, some counseling.
One of the words we're continually using in our course is the word process, that we are in process. And none of us has reached that perfection which the Word of God not only commands of us, but seemingly expects of us. We're in pretty bad shape if we have to live under the law in that sense. Happily, there's forgiveness for us, and there's always that continual growth, hopefully, as we draw upon the means of grace and as we live in Jesus Christ. Sir, I think you wanted to say something. Yes?
I just wanted to say that with regard to putting restrictions on the course, in some respects it's difficult to do that unless you have an in-depth study of the marriage before the people come in, which is almost impossible. I don't know. I know a little bit about Marriage Encounter. I've talked to several people who've been involved in it. I've considered getting involved in it myself to go through the process. But I think that you would find that a lot of women, and a lot of men too, for that matter, would have a tendency not to tell you all the facts about just where their marriage is coming in. So weeding out people by setting up some restrictions, I don't think is going to be completely foolproof, yeah. Be a difficult thing to do.
Thank you. I saw Jim's hand up before, too.
I just wondered, the way you're talking about that you want to get somebody in your church into this program, all you do is you get a hold of a hostess and everything's all set up and nice. But what happens if you're stuck out in Gumshoe, Texas? The closest town around is, 50 miles away and it's got 25 people. And you haven't got a hostess. What do you do then? And you can't support somebody to send them to Florida and say, here, take the course and become a trainer, so we've got somebody around here now. Now, what do you do in a situation like that?
We have many teachers in the United States that travel, and it's done when it's a distance of any, you know, anything more than within, like, say, the metropolitan area. It's done in the form of what we call a seminar, as distinguished from a class. A seminar consists of 2.5 hours on Friday night and from 9 to 3 on Saturday. The whole course in total is presented. The assignments are given to be done over the next 4-week period. And it might be a little hard in Gumshoe, Texas, with only 25 people, because usually the requirements, the requirements are like 50 to 100 people, depending on the distance. You have to have that many pre-registered and prepaid, because the instructor pays all her own expenses: flights, motels, meals, the whole bit. And so that's how it's worked in a situation like that.
Also, I'm just kind of interested in what kind of follow-up do you have? Like, say, for instance, these people, well, kind of two prongs. One is follow-up on the class itself, like a month from now or maybe a year from now. How has this thing turned out, if it's turned out, or did it just die within the month following? And secondly, like for these people who dedicate or rededicate their lives, is there any kind of follow-up there in regard to... Have they stuck with this determination to dedicate their lives to Christ? Is there any kind of follow-up in any of these areas?
Go ahead. It's sort of like, you know, if your professors were following you up in the pastorate. It's almost impossible with the thousands and thousands, literally, of alumni all over the country today to follow them up from the standpoint of, are they sticking with the principles? I'd have died if you'd followed me up after I took the course. But as far as if a woman receives Christ at the course, then we send them a letter and we send them the uniqueness of Jesus. That's what I use. The introduction to the 10 steps to Christian maturity put out by Campus Crusade for Christ, and encourage them to follow, to do a little bit in this. It's a Bible study booklet, a little bit each day. And this is a question that I guess Maribel gets a lot: do you follow them up? And she said that because of the vast numbers of people, that she just has to trust God to follow them up.
We recommend that they find, get involved in a church that teaches God's Word, also hopefully a Bible study.
I think I saw Paul's hand up, did I? And then Tom again.
Yeah, I was wondering, going into this precisely, in the fourth session where you do witness, how do you go about the witness in relation to the course? And that's part of the question, and the other part of the question is, in the actual family situation, in the improved family, has this sometimes been a good witness for Christ, and has it had results in that sense?
Go ahead.
The witness for Christ comes as a natural part of the course, because we're talking about that. We started out in the very first session talking about a girl's spiritual house, in other words, body, soul, and spirit. We talk the first three sessions about body and soul, and then we pick up in the last session about spirit. And when we talk about spirit, naturally, God is the only one that can guarantee success, and that's how we lead into our testimonies and how God's been important in our lives, and how He's built our marriages.
Tom.
Yeah, I was going to give the women a rest here and ask the men. You said your two wives here have had follow-up, you know, they're teaching now. With total wives, do you feel yourself total husbands and wives? Because as Cal Mirabelle said, you have to become a total husband.
I got to say something to that first. My husband said the first couple of weeks that he was now married to a tall woman teacher instead of a tall woman. I hope that that was sort of kidding. I'm not too sure.
I have a, personally, I always feel like I have a long way to go when you feel like anything's totally, you kind of feel like you're stagnating in anything, I guess, in your job or in your Christian life or anything. I guess total woman to me has always almost been a misnomer, because the fact that a woman, the totality of a woman, you really can't, as a man, you really can't figure out as far as their, how much they do mean to you, you know, as far as their relationship to you, you're married and you make the best of a great situation that you chose to get into in the first place. And I never feel like I'm, total man. I'm thankful about being married and God sent her in a way. I had to get hit over the head to find out we got married. I got traded from the St. Louis Cardinals to Atlanta Falcons, and just then realized that I was going to lose a fantastic person that God provided. And I flew back from Atlanta on a Monday and been trying to become more of a total man ever since. anyhow, that's where I'm at in as far as a total man goes.
You're in process, I understand. Huh? Yeah. Not retrogressing, but going forward. You can go both directions, too, I guess. Yes, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I wondered just what your unit on sex covers. Is this a sex education unit, or what are your goals in that?
The goals in the sex unit. Now this is where our classes are composed of Christians and non-Christians. Many times the Christians have hang-ups about sex, because in so many of the fundamental religions, I don't know, people get weird ideas. And throughout history, people have had, women have had weird ideas about sexual relationships and marriage. So what we try to do is free the girls of past misconceptions in the chapter, in the lesson on sex, and tell them strictly God's view of sex, beginning with the Garden of Eden, and exactly what it is that he points out. The scriptural passages we point out as in relation to sex. Yes.
How does it sizzle then? I noticed it's
nothing hotter than comfortable sex.
You said something about doing what comes naturally and it wasn't working or something. I was wondering how the sizzle gets in there. I think I know, but
Well, it's like one of the gals in my classes that met her husband at the door in Saran Wrap, and he said, "What, leftovers again?"
What techniques are involved, or are they... I imagine those who have read the book are aware of some of the things that Mirabelle suggests. Is that what you basically deal with and so forth? Do you have difficulty, for example, with some of the assignments that you suggest that they follow?
We get a lot of groans after the one that says, "Be prepared mentally and physically to have sex with your husband every night this week." That's the... for the following week after the course, I get a lot of groans, don't you? Yeah. Here again, it has a lot to do with attitude. A woman one of the things we try to get across to our women is that a woman's best sex organ is her brain, and that it really just has an awful lot to do with how she thinks about it, how she feels about herself. I was talking with a friend the other night that has some tremendous hang-ups in the area of sex, and it all boiled down to her self-image. She had a really poor self-image, has a really poor self-image, and as a result, just is totally disinterested in sex because she just doesn't even feel good about herself or her own body. Do you want to add? Does that help? Does that answer your question or not? If not, you know, we'll work on it some more.
I guess it makes me feel like I'm a little bit more than I just come back to what you said. You said a lot of Christian women do have hang-ups and seem to overcome this. And it's mainly through just talking and sharing biblical things that you try to overcome this. Or?
There's some good, I read it, she brings home a bunch of books on this total woman, have a bibliography that's quite extensive and really is helpful. I believe it's in the back of the book. And one of them was a thing that's called The Power of Sexual Surrender. And I happened to read that shortly after Marcia started teaching it. And that's quite an aid. It, you know, over 30 years, I didn't know some of those things went on, even in marriage, you know. So, it really helps out to, you know, to become aware of what is possible in the sexual side of marriage, and use other people's knowledge through books, and that really helped me out.
That book has been a tremendous help to a number of the women in my classes. The Power of Sexual Surrender by Marie Robinson. It is not a Christian book, is it? No, but I had one woman state that book had helped her to overcome sex neuroses that 2 years of psychiatry hadn't done anything for. So we don't get the impression that we have all the answers in any of it, and particularly in sex, because this is a really big important part of marriage where a lot of hang-ups occur. And there are a couple of books, that one and Sexual Happiness in Marriage is another one that we recommend by Miles.
The first one is not in the bibliography in the back,
right.
Is it?
No, it isn't. I don't.
But Miles is.
The book was out of print, but
that's
it is
right.
Back in.
Is it back?
Right.
Is it paper bound?
Yes.
Yes.
In fact, it has a rose on the cover that says, "For all those women enrolled in Fascinating Womanhood and Total Woman courses." So,
well, I think I may have seen that. One of the assignments for our class a couple of weeks ago was to read the Song of Songs, or Song of Solomon. In the course of Bible reading that I'm following this year, it happens to have concluded today. In addition to the other time that I read it, for this course, I concluded it today. And I was thinking that some words that Marable has in the book might be applicable. In other words, she says, sex is for the marriage relationship only, but within these bounds, anything goes. Sex is as clean and pure as eating cottage cheese. I thought that was rather, I underlined that one for my own benefit. But another one that she has in another place, she says, because woman came out of man, he was incomplete without her, and she was incomplete without him. Thus they had the urge to merge. This was God's idea. What a great romantic. After all, he could have had them reproduced by rubbing noses. And then she says later on, the creator of sex intended for his creatures to enjoy it. We need never be ashamed to talk about what God was not ashamed to create. God viewed his creation, and behold, it was very good. And then she continues, it was good, it was good, it was very good. Which I think maybe gives you an idea about the sizzle that she might have. Well, one quarter of the book does deal with this matter of sex, and I think it's well for us to spend time, or as much time as anybody would like, with it. I was wondering if there were possibly any other areas that seem to pose problems to people. Like, I know you were interviewed and so forth, and I dare say that the sex question comes up quite frequently. I haven't heard this. I've heard about the Saran wrap, but is it in here somewhere? Did I miss it?
One of them is, I think. Not that particular one.
Yeah, I guess I'll have to reread it for the Saran wrap. But what other areas? Is it the submissiveness bit? Does that pose a serious problem?
Adapting.
Others that are significant areas of difficulty that keep coming up in interviews and the like?
Those are the two.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting, and since you have a group of prospective ministers here, it's interesting that the adapting area comes up in the evangelical Christian circles as much, if not more, than from just the woman off the street who may or may not have any religious training at all. And the more fundamental the woman is in many aspects, the more they seem to be against that particular biblical principle. And they usually, and this is just my own experience with being associated with a total woman instructor, but usually fundamental Christian women will attack the sex angle of the book because they don't want to attack the adapting angle of it, because they know that's in Scripture and is too well defined, so they attach the other angle so that they don't have to deal with the adapting and following through in that area.
Yeah, if it's wrong in one part, then the whole thing's no good and you throw it out.
Right.
Yes, a very convenient excuse. Yes, please.
Could you explain the adapting part of it a little more, what it all about?
Maribel mentions the key to adapting when she says men and women are equal in status but different in function. In other words, if take a company, it has just one president, one decision maker, and if you have two people making decisions, you have chaos. Very similar, I won't mention the business that's located here in town, but there were two brothers that were both owners of the business, and they were both trying to make decisions, and finally one brother had to sell out to the other brother because they found that two brothers could not make the decisions, just one could. And this is primarily in adapting. We're saying the husband needs to make the final decision, the ultimate decision, because God's given him the authority as head of the household. And God designed marriages the way they would work the best. And we can't question that principle.
One of the definitions that I give when I talk about adapting is that it's fitting in with your husband's plan, and that submission is not subservience. I've had to make that distinction I don't know how many times, particularly in interviews, media type interviews. But submission, to the way I define it, is to be under the protection of your husband, I like the sound of that, and that really sort of takes the edge off. You know, if we've got a stray feminist or something in the group, that's a little easier for her to swallow.
Yes.
I have another question. Looking at you, I suddenly realized something. Does this class that you have, is it primarily helpful for white Anglo-Saxon Protestants who are probably at least in the middle class and quite well educated? Or does it for all classes,
all groups? It seems like they have to be quite verbal and intellectual. They all need to benefit from this. I'm not saying
that it's a criticism. I just wondered, is that a limitation you see in the people you deal with?
The same problem that you're bringing up, I thought about a lot. in my classes, for example, I have all socioeconomic ranges of girls, from very blue girls with whose husbands are in the blue collar class, to girls whose husbands are presidents of corporations. I have not had any blacks at all. I have had other minorities. I have had Chinese and Japanese. I simply have not had any blacks. And I really can't answer, I guess, your question to appealing to. You know, it's going to be interesting because next month I'm going to be doing a seminar at Fort Leonard Wood. The Army is paying for the course for the girls who are going to be attending, and I'm really looking forward to it because I'm hoping that there will be minorities, quite a few minorities there, to see how they react.
Greg, yes.
This question may not even apply, but looking at this from the standpoint of its possible potentials in counseling in the parish, I seem to think that perhaps it wouldn't be a bad idea for, in a premarital setting, for a more total understanding of there's more to life than, as we talked about in class, than just the wedding day and reception, and then everything's okay. And I'm wondering, has anyone in your experience, have you had engaged girls come to your courses? And how does it work?
I've had quite a few high school girls, not even engaged girls, just unmarried high school juniors and seniors, and one in a seminar in Quincy that said that she wished that her whole class of home ec girls could take the course, because the teacher was teaching prostitution as a method of putting themselves through college. That's one reason, but it was really something. I'm sure get this too. An awful lot of times people will call and say, I'm not married, can I take it? And this kind of thing. And I hardly recommend that they do take it. Obviously they can't. I just finished a class where I'm a mother of a girl's boyfriend, and the girlfriend came. That didn't come out quite right. It was a 16-year-old girl came with her boyfriend's mother and took the course, and she asked me afterward if there was any special, if there were any special assignments I could give her, because obviously she can't fulfill all of the assignments. Now, many of them she can. There are many assignments that an unmarried girl can fulfill. And I spoke to a group of high school seniors once, of about 100 of them, and there were even a couple of fellas in the group, just I think about two or three. It was a home ec class, and it was devastating because they were just out to get me. They really were. They were most of them were really into the women's lib already, and that made me feel sort of sad in a way, because here they were, you know, just not even engaged or anything, and they were already down on the man and this kind of thing. But it was a good experience for me, and a lot of them asked a lot of questions about their mothers, you know, and what could their mothers do. You could sort of see that underneath they saw that there was some value in this, and that they sort of wished that their parents would follow this kind of thing, but that they sure weren't ready to accept it for themselves.
Do you have a special set of assignments then, or would you have to kind of work?
I have to work. Do you have it? Have you done that? I haven't.
Well, the assignments on sex, naturally, an unmarried girl can't follow through with, but so many of the things she can. For example, plan a special dinner for her boyfriend or fiancé, or communication is naturally very apropos. I know a minister in a church that's very close to us, and he insists on counseling all couples that are going to be married in his church before they get married. And he recommends the course to these couples as just a part of his counseling. Mm-hmm. So many of the things, as Mary Lou pointed out, the girls can do.
Once again, if you're out in Gumshoe, Texas, or wherever it was, Chewing Gum, Arkansas, why, maybe, what about the use of the book in premarital counseling? Does that also have relevance to your question, Greg?
Yeah, I
guess
I wondered
if it had
been adapted
for everyone to
answer
your question. Are you still asking that question?
Yeah, I'd be interested.
Why don't you answer that?
Well, I think that goes along with the recommendation of the course to women who are being counseled. You can recommend a book as a help for the woman to read. It's very devastating, I think, for a husband to recommend a book to his wife for obvious reasons. That's a tantamount to saying, I think you need to improve, I'm already perfect, therefore you better shape up. But for a counselor to do it and say, I think that there are some things in the book which could be beneficial to you in working out your marriage problems or in as you prepare for marriage, I think it would be a very good idea.
Yes,
sir. Just after having said that, in front of my book, I gave this to my wife on her birthday, 1974. That was the book here.
When will the divorce be final?
we got a 90-day guarantee and we're still hanging
out. It's a shame.
But I didn't give it to her out of it with the idea that, you know, there's so much wrong with you that, you know, here's an owner's manual on how to be a wife. Go read the book and then everything's going to be right. That crossed my mind. that being my first marriage, that there was a lot wrong with me too. But I hadn't read the book. I bought the book. I sent it to somebody to give to her. And she read it, and it was really helpful to her. And it's really changed her, and that has changed me a lot too. And then for the assignment, we were supposed to read this, which I was beginning to wonder if it was a mistake, because I was going through. And I thought, all these neat things, boy, that would be nice if she did this and that and this and that.
Exactly.
All right. My wife's not doing it. And I thought, well, gee, I kind of felt like I was getting shortchanged then, because here I've got my wife, I even bought the hardcover book. And she wasn't making the full use of it. And I guess it was coming up in my mind when you were talking about recommending these things in marriage counseling to a single girl. I guess my first reaction would be, if I was the guy engaged to the girl, was to find out what I was missing out on, and I'd go grab the book too. And do you see a problem then with guys picking up the book then and say, you know, having higher expectations of their wives or wives-to-be than maybe they really should have or have a right to expect?
That's why I read the book again. I read it, he read it, I read it again.
You take it to bed with you, and you read it and go, and then you put it down and don't say a word. Guaranteed to read it again. I think there is a problem. I think that it is a problem in situations where a man is not mature enough to realize that this is a two-way street. I mean, obviously, that book or any book which is written to one sex and not the other could be used as a whipping post. And unfortunately, many of us, myself included, have a tendency to use a whipping post when it seems to be to our best interest. It's difficult sometimes not to say, well, on page 36 it says, and you're not. But you have to realize, and I think you used a very good word, the word expectations. If we go into marriage or maintain our marriage relationships based on the expectations of our partner, we are always, every time, completely going to be disappointed. And I say that in terms of the long run. If you read Corinthians, the 1 Corinthians, the 13th chapter, you'll find out that love, real love, the agape kind of love, has absolutely nothing to do with the object's love, attitude, and reaction. It is an act of the will toward towards that person in spite of what they do or do not do. And that is exemplified completely in Jesus Christ when he was nailed on the cross and said, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." He loved us to the end, even to the cross. And we, in the marriage relationship, need to love our wives or our husbands in that kind of love. If our love is demanding, then we need to review our love and find out what is lacking in us.
I'd like to just speak to one thing that you said and give another little plug, if I might, for both of us, that we've had an awful lot of women say that they've benefited a great deal more from taking the course than they did just simply from reading the book. Don't you find that to be true?
Yes.
Much, there's a, what you might call team spirit sort of a thing, and there's just a tremendous benefit in getting together with other women and hearing what they have to say and getting suggestions and reactions and sympathizing with, you know, this kind of thing. It seems to benefit much. I felt that way tremendously from, I had read the book twice before I took the course and had applied very few of the principles, but when I took the course, I really began to apply them, and it was a much better situation.
The general group dynamics principles are at work, and I think our Lord had an idea about it. I know he did when he said, "Forsake not the assembling of yourselves together." And we have been assembled together for quite a number of moments, and I'm sure that you people are tired. We certainly are not. We could go on for several hours yet, I'm sure, except that maybe there will be some burnt sacrifices on some in some ovens and all of that. But if there is anything that you would like to say in conclusion, why, we'd be delighted to hear it. If not, we would extend to you our very, very profound gratitude, our heartfelt wishes for the Lord's blessings upon your continued work, wherever it might be, whether it be on the football field or lecturing to some lovely women who are in the process, we trust, of becoming total women, whether it's studying Greek and Hebrew, as we have learned to love it and appreciate it here at Concordia. Our wish would be that you would be as happy in that process and in the fulfillment of it as those of us who have gone through it have been. Are there any words that you have, or?
If I could just take a minute, and I think this is very appropriate. One girl said at the very end of the last class, "I think you're point of being in the process is really the best one, because no one's ever arrived. I don't think either Mary Lou or I know of a total woman. We're always in the process." And this is what one girl said: "At one point I became discouraged, feeling I have so much to learn and so far to go, succeeding at some points, missing at others, but realized then that it's not an overnight crash miracle course, but a lifetime of putting these suggestions into effect. I needed to hear you repeat, as you did, keep it up. No one is an instant total woman."
Thank you. I think that may say it all. God bless you all.
Thank you.